Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Answerable Questions with Questionable Answers, the show in which we try and answer some of life's meaningful and meaningless questions. My name is Marcus. Sarah's here.
I am indeed.
Chris is here.
As always.
And we have a very special guest for you today, Ruth Yamika Afolabi.
Hi, everyone.
Coming up with a good idea can be very difficult. Putting that idea into practice can be even harder than that. However, it is quite obvious that thousands and thousands of ideas come to pass all the time, with some going on to make a huge impact in people's lives. Today, we're asking the question, how do you start something new? And one of the main reasons we have Ruth with us, there's lots of good reasons because Ruth's a fantastic individual, is that Ruth is the founder and CEO of Magnify, which encompasses Magnify magazine, the Magnify podcast, and other digital resources. The Huffington Post once described Magnify magazine as faith, feminism, and fashion, the Christian magazine breaking every stereotype. So then, Ruth, with all your experience behind you and with you, how do you start something new?
Oh, big question. I think... I guess one of the things I've learned over the last 11 and a half years is starting with the things that you're passionate about and also an area that you feel that you can make a difference in, or that something that frustrates you or something that you want to change. So say for me, I realized not just with Magnify, but in general, I really like things to be presentable and as engaging as possible. So that's why I love branding. So I can imagine in the future, if I did start a branding agency, that would make complete sense. So I think, yeah, looking at your gifts and then something that actually frustrates you, that you feel like your gifts align to making a difference in that area, is always a great place to start.
Yeah, I think that's a fair beginning, you know, about your you've got to be passionate about something. You've got to be passionate about, you know, if you're going to get up and go and go forth with an idea. Chris, you're quite good at starting stuff as well, if I may say. Don't worry, Sarah, we'll get to you in a minute. But
because I'm rubbish at starting.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Sarah, you and I are here for balance today. Don't worry about that.
We're good at endings.
Such as conversations. But Chris, you are, I think you're good at starting stuff. I think that it is a skill of yours, if I may say.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I am definitely someone who gets excited about the early days of stuff, the kind of coming up with ideas, how's it going to work, trying to put your team together. Ruth, I thought it was interesting what you're saying about essentially, it feels like you want to solve a problem.
Yeah.
Like there is a problem that needed solving. And I was watching a talk earlier on by TD Jakes, and he was talking about how if your business or your whatever your enterprise is solves a problem, then you actually have to do a lot less marketing, because it's a lot. Yeah, I find that like a really interesting thing. If you solve a problem, I don't need to persuade you to buy it. But if you don't need it, I have to spend a lot of resources in solving a problem. And so I think in my own experiences, if I've started something new, it always feels like it's for a reason other than me. It feels like I need to solve a problem or sort something out. I think actually, Ruth, we met a long time ago, didn't we? Was it at that thing I did that? The biggest thing I ever set up was a thing called Fashion for Freedom, which was trying to use fashion to raise awareness of trafficking and exploitation. Yeah. So yeah, back to your point, Marcus. I do like starting things up. I think my issue will often be in keeping it going. I think I run out of steam quite quickly.
So I definitely feel that.
One of my jobs massively at the UN was doing project development, and I liked that because then I could give it to the project managers to keep going.
Right. So you're the guy who starts stuff up, whereas, yeah, as you say, keeping it going could be quite tricky.
Yeah. Sarah, I'll set a fire and run away.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Sarah, you've suggested that you're not good at starting stuff, and then you kind of alluded there that you're not good at keeping it going. What have you got to say about any of this?
I feel like in my life, maybe just the role I've fallen into, I tend to be the person who, when people like Chris and possibly Ruth get things started, and then they go off and do all the important kind of, you know, CEO stuff and, you know, the really top line stuff, I'm usually the person who ends up being dragged in somehow to then they're like, okay, we actually need to make this work.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
You're a debt collector. Help. That's what you are. You're like you're an administrator.
I'm knocking on the doors.
If Sarah
That's
turns
what
up,
I'm doing.
If you turn up, the business has gone wrong, the administrators are here, liquidation's just around the corner. Yeah, I find starting anything, it's hard enough coming up with an idea, but starting something, I don't know where to begin. I just sort of think, how do go about doing this? Because Ruth, you were 19 years old when you started Magnify.
Yep.
Which that genuinely blows my mind.
Absolutely blows my mind.
Well, it does, yeah. I'm sort of quite in awe of that, that kind of idea that especially being young, you can start something and then follow it through. You're in your first year at university and you now have magazine, podcast, very successful, blah, 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 blah. Please check out, the website and the podcast, ladies and gentlemen. You won't be disappointed. But yeah. What have you always been this way inclined, or was it this particular idea or this particular sort of creation that you wanted to come up with and you couldn't let it go?
Anyone who knows me knows that I will always mention my parents, who are my best friends, but also I think just I have to give so much credit to them, because even when I talk to friends and they'll be like, oh, I've got an idea, but I'm like scared to like pursue it, I realize that I have just, ever since I was young, always, even sometimes completely misplaced, had the confidence to always just like follow through with things that I thought of or things that I enjoyed. And definitely it came from my parents, particularly with my brother and I. Anything that we even showed remote interest in, they would encourage us to kind of pursue that to the nth degree till we got bored and then wanted to do something else. So, you know, when I was 7, I remember that was my first business. I sold friendship bracelets to other children at school. It wasn't a cost-effective business.
Is that entrepreneurial spirit? You hear this from people. You hear this from people. Oh, when I was a kid, you would draw pictures and sell them for 2p to my client or whatever, and my mum told me you shouldn't do that and so on. See, I never had this.
So, yeah, I remember the friendship bracelets. And my parents would like encourage me in that, and then Teletubbies at that age was like a thing, so I would like borrow my dad's printer to print off posters and then sell it to children at school.
Oh my goodness,
always making money.
So yeah, I think that just from a young age I never felt the fear of like this might not work. I just always assumed that it would work, which I think in some ways is like a good quality to have. Other times, like, fear is actually there as a good boundary and barrier to you. So yeah, from a young age I've always felt that anything I was passionate about. So when I was 11, that's when I got into tennis for the first time, bearing in mind that's quite young for anyone who becomes a professional tennis player, but really took a liking to it and then basically would train almost every other day from when I was 11. So I think I've just always had that, but it has definitely been nurtured by my parents, and also the fact that with my brother and I, they never made us feel like embarrassed or upset if something didn't work. They were just like, either you can try again if this is what you want to do, or you can like think of something else that you want to do. And I guess I would always see, particularly then when I was like from 15, my Saturday jobs or like Christmas holiday jobs would be at Topshop, and I would see like my manager, who would say that they'd been there for 15 years, that literally just looked bored out of their mind. And so I think I had it like very much in my head that life, you get to have the life in many ways that you like, the decisions that you make that will determine the type of life that you have. So if you're prepared to settle and be really bored, you probably will be in a job that you find really boring, that you come to work and sleep. But for me, I always found that like, why would I kind of bother to be on earth and then just be living this existence that I don't really feel like I'm contributing, and also I don't feel I'm giving like my full self to. And then combined with that, I have always liked working. So I am very much like 150%, or I'm zero, like not interested at all.
That's why you're different from Mark.
Yeah. Very different. I am never, I'm always double figures when it comes to percentage. But low double figures. But no, I think, but it's interesting, you know, what Ruth is saying there, Chris, because often people, it's a fear of failure that can hold people back. Clearly that was not a problem for you, Ruth. Fear of success can hold people back as well, because if you succeed, your life could change. Ooh. It's almost like fear is maybe not the right word perhaps, but it is a fear or a dread of becoming bored, becoming stuck. It is like, that is just so undesirable. Like, I just don't want to be bored is what I'm saying. Now, do you have that as well, Chris? Because again, you like to sort of start things up and maybe move on to the next thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And I think it's also, I get sparked ideas spark off of people. I think as much as I'm probably, believe it or not, more on the introvert side of the spectrum, then I, when I'm with people, they'll say something and it will create something in my mind that I can't, it doesn't leave. And I think for me, they're the things I'll act on, because you have 100 ideas a day sometimes, but it's those ones that just nag away at you, don't leave you. They're the ones that I'll actually do something about and have to act upon as well. I don't mind being a bit bored, but I think the actually for me, the kind of the boredom is like a fertile soil where my ideas grow from. So I don't mind having those fallow periods, but I will come out of those with loads of ideas and then a bit of a plan and do something from it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I just sort of go with the flow a bit. I mean, in my first year at university, I was trying to work out how to operate a tumble dryer. You know, and you're sort of going on. I mean, Sarah, back me up here.
I actually did loads of great stuff in my first year. I just can't remember any of it. I definitely would say I'm more of a go with the flow person as well.
But I think you have good ideas, Sarah. Is it just that, would you think, I'll get round to that when it sort of suits me? I mean, I don't want to do you a disservice, but at the same time, I don't want to...
So for me, it's very much, as we were saying earlier, it's the fear of failure. And it's the, where do I begin? So the ideas are in the brain. They're floating around sort of amorphously in the brain.
Yeah.
But I basically need like an internal Chris Gall to project manage, to figure out who's going to do what part of my brain's going to do what, because for me, it's almost that the idea is, I really struggle turning it into a reality.
Yeah.
So, and I think... Also, like Ruth, you were saying, when you were talking about failure and how failure is not a bad thing and, you know, it's nothing to be afraid of, like that really hits home for me, because I definitely think I'm frightened of failure. I'm sort of like, if I don't start it, I can't ever fail it. And so that's fine. We don't have to deal with the failure, which is obviously silly and wrong, but I think that's probably where it comes from.
But is there nothing that nags away at you where you're like, I just need to do this thing?
Oh, I've mentioned this so many times. I keep starting, like, writing a book and then being like, no, it's silly. I don't want to.
People how you getting on
laugh
with that?
At me.
How are you getting on with the
I've
book?
Got so many drafts on my computer. So many. I'll get there eventually. Yeah. I just need one more lockdown.
I was going to say, I was hoping lockdown would produce something.
Because I think one of the things, thinking back, that helped me, probably from a young age, I loved reading people's stories and people who had been... very successful. So even my dad would always like tell me the KFC story when I was like 15 years old. That would be on the way to school is what he's talking to me about. And he'd be like, you know, this person was in their 70s and they failed or tried different things their whole life. And then at that age, that was when they then discovered something that obviously has like in many ways changed their industry. So I think because I was always so aware of other people's stories and the fact that I'd never read or like watched a story of somebody who'd been successful that hadn't failed like a million times, it completely like normalized it in my brain. And then I think the second thing is that it's not always a good quality, but I'm very laser focused in the sense that things that I'm not 150% interested in, I can't even be one of those people that will like do things out of duty. I'm just like, I'm either going to dedicate myself completely to it or actually I have no interest, which I think saying no to so many things has been what has helped me continue Magnify for 11 and a half years, is that along the way I've had friends who like they'll think of an idea, then after like a year it's like, oh, what happened to that? After like, you know, they bought a website and like paid a developer and all of this, they're like, oh, I wasn't really like interested and now I'm thinking of this other thing. I think partly because I've also seen it as a calling that has helped to just be focused and say no to things and no to people that I felt that this just doesn't align with what I've been called to do, at least in this season of my life.
Yeah, I have to say I still find it interesting when as you say, when you commit to something, you're all in, because I think actually that's quite a rare thing. I think so many of us love a bit of procrastination, or we love just, oh, come on.
Oh, yes.
You know, let's, yeah, I could write up that thing, but oh, let's have another custard cream or whatever. You know, like it really is. I mean, the Forbes.
Ruth, can you see what I'm up against with these two? I've had to drag them kicking and screaming.
I really didn't want to do this wretched podcast, but Chris made us, and here we are. But no, I it's funny actually. One thing that I did start doing years ago, and it's never went anywhere in terms of making me money or anything, but I don't think that was ever the point, was I always wanted to have a little bash at like open mic stand-up comedy. And this is, you know, sort of 10 years ago or however long ago it was. And it was a case of, well, how am I going to start doing that? Like, I've no idea. And then you sort of chat to one or two people and they say, oh, well, there's this open mic thing there. And actually, if you go on their website, you can sign up. And then it's those little steps you take and you go, I'm slightly closer to doing that, slightly closer. And you think, okay, well, I better come up with some material because I can't just stand up there and do why did the chicken cross the road jokes, because that's plagiarism and rubbish. And so watching then stand-up comedians, and you get a bit of inspiration, and then you jot down some ideas, you find out the hard way that they're not funny and so on. But, you know, you get up there and you have a bit of practice and whatnot. And it was an itch that I needed to scratch, I think. Mm. Which is not exactly the same as some of the examples that you're using here, because, you know, this is your job and this is what you've gone on to do. But then the other podcast I do, the Football Ramble, was an idea I had. But as you said, Sarah, you know, it wasn't just my idea, it was a few of us. And I think one of the reasons why that has gone well is because we're a team, and you have someone who pushes us in a sort of a marketing sense and a business sense, and so that's not really my forte, shall we say. But I was going to just list I was looking at, when I was researching this, Forbes did the five things that make getting started very, very difficult. And it simply, the first one was change, because change is scary. It's the idea of changing, getting out the boat and doing something like that, and that causes us to delay and so on. Second was fear of failure. Third was looking silly or embarrassing yourself, which I thought was interesting. Yeah. And I lived that doing open mic stand-up comedy. And then worrying about resources, your money, equipment, people power, etc. And then the last one was sort of life gets in the way. I mean, do you relate to any of that, Chris?
No.
No, you're just above it all, aren't you?
Yeah, just, like, it was Ruth, the way I think, that Chris said it so slowly. He was like, let me have a think. No, that's not...
Yeah. I do.
Whereas I'm literally there, like yes.
Yeah.
It's hard working with perfect people, guys.
It's not. I think like Ruth said earlier. Like, I think I'm here for one life, and I need to do something. Otherwise, I'm just going to exist. And there is that, and I completely relate to that fear of just looking back and going, oh, I've done nothing over the last 10 years. Mm. Like, what have I done with my whole life? So I'd rather give things a go. I am, again, probably, it's that character trait of being all in. I'm not. I remember on a previous show, Marcus, we were talking about personality traits, and you were saying that I wasn't caring or something. What were you saying? I wasn't a carer.
I said that you are you hate people and you're a despicable piece of work. Was my precise words.
No, I think there was this threefold personality trait. There's adventurer, carer, and truth teller. And you were saying that you didn't think I was on the carer part of it.
I took that back afterwards. I felt that
you did privately, not in public. Like,
yeah,
you
I'm doing
public.
It now.
All right, thank you. And I think that it's not that I'm not a carer. I just think, probably like you were saying, Ruth, like when I've got something in my head that should be done, I'll just do that. And I try to not be easily distracted, although I can be, I feel like I've got to do something, and I don't think it's from an unhealthy place. I think sometimes it can be of trying to, I'm not doing it to be seen or loved. You know, I should get those in more healthy places. But yeah, I think it's from a good place. I just want to do something.
Yeah, I mean, Ruth, what would you say to somebody who is asking that question, you know, or wondering, you know, where do I begin? I don't know how to get going. Because presumably when you were in your first year at university, the thought of having this idea of creating a magazine which incorporates feminism, fashion and all that kind of stuff, like it wasn't at your fingertips, if you see what I mean. You had to go through quite a lot of stages, I'm guessing, and there was quite a lot of planning and so on. How did you tackle that kind of not knowing where to begin?
So I think the first point was that with me, it started from like my own personal journey. So coming to understand, like, I'd lost three people in my family 2 years before that. And so a lot of what I viewed faith as was completely shaken. And then kind of coming back to my faith, I had then felt that faith was often presented in a way that wasn't accessible. So there was never a thought to like start an organization or to start a magazine. I was just like, I want to make faith accessible for my friends. And having gone to an all-girls school, my friends were women. So literally just the plan was to do one event in Durham. So I think that's partly what helped me. I always use this Martin Luther King Jr. quote as faith is taking the first step, even when you can't see the full staircase. And I don't mean it in like the religious sense of the word. In terms of like, some people, they get so overwhelmed with like, they might have an idea, but then they're thinking, oh, there are all these businesses who are like so far advanced, who've been running for like 30 years, that have like loads of employees. But if you try to think of the end before you begin, you never will get going, because you'll become so overwhelmed. So I think what helped me was that there was never a concept that it would be anything besides one event. And my passion and my focus was to do that one event really, really well. And so within 3 weeks, we had 100 women show up to that event, which gave me the first inkling that, wow, with such a short, in such a short space of time, with an idea that doesn't even have a name, something about it has made people want to gravitate towards it. And then felt, okay, let's try this in like a bigger city. So let's do it in London, where I'm from. Then we had 200 women. And then from there, it was like interacting with people who saw that events are really expensive, and actually if people are coming from all across the country and from different backgrounds, unless you're going to continue to run events in regional places, it will be quite difficult to keep in relationship with them and keep inspiring them and equipping them. So then the idea, this was in 2009, was like, why don't we start a blog? And so I think for me, what's helped is that obviously 11 and a half years down, we have much bigger plans and strategy and all of that. But still, what keeps me motivated every day is just within wherever we are at the moment, how can we best serve the audience that we've been given? And then we've seen like the vision has continued to grow. But I think I would have found it overwhelming if at 19, I was literally like, like, even the magazine came 6 years into the vision, and was because people had so many questions that really the blog wasn't necessarily the best format for it. And as we started to put questions into what we thought would be a brochure, that turned into like the first 80-page magazine. So I think what's helped me along the journey has never been that there's been some grand plan to like sit down and create this media organization. It's definitely been each step of the way. And having been a person who, I studied politics at university, nothing to do with creativity. I remember in school, this is where my overconfidence doesn't always work. I thought I was a great artist. And the Ofsted or whatever, they were coming to our school, but the way that they had picked the students to review their work, it was like completely random. But they'd picked my work, but the art teacher had then taken it home to basically redo it, because they were like, we can't we can't show Ofsted this. Same way in history, my teacher would tell me, like, you know, Ruth, you can't have sentences that are 9 lines long. It just doesn't make sense. You need to break it up in between into a, like, that's a paragraph. And so I laugh at the fact that, like, for someone who wasn't creative and apparently like couldn't really write well, obviously I'm like an editor and run Magnify now, but I never... Yeah, I think that's why passion is so important, because you can nurture your gifts, or you can build a team with people who are passionate about different areas. But passion, I would say, is the thing that has really carried me through over the last 11 and a half years, rather than kind of sitting down at 19 and thinking of like some grand plan. And I think the last thing I'll say is that, particularly from watching my parents, I've always had a very realistic view of like the sacrifice that goes into building things. So at university, when, you know, summer holidays, friends, I mean, fair enough, I went to Durham, they'd be like, oh, we're going on holiday. I was like, well, I'm going to do my temp job so that I can like put money into Magnify, and I'm going to stand at the photocopier for 8 weeks earning £7. But I know what I'm building towards. So I think having that laser focus, but understanding that passion isn't enough on its own, like, you know, I'm passionate about eating, but that doesn't necessarily turn into anything. But actually understanding that there's a sacrifice involved, and also that with Magnify, I definitely see it as like a vision that I've been given to steward. And so I want it to be here in 50 years, in 60 years. And so I understand that my part in this vision is just a part of the journey. And I want to like run my bit of this race as well as I possibly can.
Yeah, I totally hear what you're saying. I think that kind of step by step is very important because, yeah, I think few people, even fewer people than those who have sort of, you know, good ideas and then put them into practice, have this kind of, as you say, vision from start to finish, or at least start to quite far down the line. And you kind of just go and go and go. And that's what we did, as I say, with the other podcast, to do the Football Ramble. It was like we started this thing and you build on the little victories, and then you're invited to, I don't know, go on Sky News to give your thoughts on a new transfer record has happened from as it was Cristiano Ronaldo moving from Manchester United to Real Madrid. And you go, Sky News are asking, okay, let's do that. And you do that, and then they ask you back again, and then somebody else asks you, and then you look at the listening figures, and they go up, and you go, all right, that's okay, a bit more of that, and then you kind of adjust and adapt and you build. But at some point, I think with this stuff, you've got to get the sweet spot. You've got to celebrate the little victories, not cling on to them too much, but not dismiss them either. And you can't be kind of thinking, oh my goodness, I'm in the same room as such and such or whatever. You think, well, yeah, enjoy it. Like, don't just be like, yeah, obviously I'm in the same room as, you know, whoever it may be. Letitia Wright in your case or something like that, you know. But at the same time, like, enjoy it. But also say, well, no, I am here on merit as well. As you sort of climb that ladder, because I mean, look, Sarah, you come up with lots of things, you know, having been a journalist or just still in that kind of game and whatnot, you know what it's like climbing that, you know, little by little you're getting there, and never give in. Absolutely. To imposter syndrome is a crucial one,
massively. And I think it's funny, Ruth, as you were talking, it did kind of make me, you know, reassess a bit, and kind of, you don't have to know the full plan. So like, yeah, my first proper job in journalism, I was uploading newspaper articles onto a website in the middle of the night for a publication that I did not like, in an office full of mice. And I just couldn't mice. Really see. Yep, genuine. Oh, God, it was awful. But I could not see how that would get to anything else. But it's like, well, you do the thing at the very beginning, and then there's another step, and then there's another step, and it just keeps going that way. And, you know, yeah, I think as well, like you were saying, Marcus, it's good to kind of just take stock and go, oh, that's quite cool. I have done this thing, and I have done that thing, and I have, and I'm no longer in an office full of mice.
Yeah, that's a real.
And I think there's two phrases I hang on to. So one is in English, and one I'll like translate the Yoruba version, but one quote is like, never compare your beginning to somebody else's middle or end. Another way that a lot of Nigerian parents will translate it into their children is like, does that person have two heads? So when it's like, oh, I can't, oh, this person has done something, I can't do that, your parents would be like, but do they have two heads? So if not, you can also do that as well. Nigerian parents, it's like, they're kind, but like also very encouraging and to the point. So I think for me, I would always, like, in a healthy way, obviously you have respect for people who've like done really well in whatever field or who've built things. But I think I've never had a sense of awe about people, because I appreciate that they obviously were not born with two heads and must have started from somewhere. And I think when you see it like that, it just makes the journey a lot easier, because you're not, say with Anna Wintour, she has obviously been an editor for like however long, but I'm not 70 years old. I haven't been in the industry for 50 years. I'm not backed by a huge conglomerate. So obviously, as much as I can be inspired by her, there's no point comparing or feeling imposter syndrome in comparison to people who have like very different starts or different resources or whatever. So I think that's always been helpful to me, as much as I've been inspired by people, is to not let that overshadow or put me on the back foot, and just kind of do the best with what I've been given where I am at the moment.
Yeah, you were saying earlier on about sacrifice, and there's a quote that I really like, which is about vision gives pain a purpose. So because you have this vision for where you want to go, that actually there is pain involved. Sometimes there is cost, there's sacrifices. You said you miss your school holidays, or, you know, whatever it is. When you dedicate yourself to something that you... you have to let go of other things, don't you? And it always reminded me of, I'm sure some people have done it, not everyone, but like when you have a vision for how you want to look on holiday, like that will get me into the gym more. Like I'll go through the pain required because I have a vision of what I want to look like. And I guess that that also applies to when we want to start something new, that there is always a cost. But if you've got the vision for it and you believe in that, like you said, then actually you're prepared to go through that pain to get there in the end.
Definitely.
And it's definitely something that helps me, is that when I've got that vision, and as I said, if it nags away and it's lodged in there, then you got, I don't know, you just got to go for it.
Definitely.
Yeah. I think to sort of sum up, I think if we really want to start something, then we will. I think you give in to that urge, if you see what I mean. It doesn't have to play out like that as a sort of giving in, but for someone like me, as I say, who tends to be a bit more relaxed and procrastinates quite a bit, you know, that urge will kind of win in the end if it is something in particular. Although talking of procrastination, I did meet a man once who was at university. I think he was at university, and his final dissertation was on procrastination. Didn't get around to finishing it. Left university with nothing.
Wow.
Yeah, and I'd tell you something. I said, I know that might hamper you in later life, but from me, my friend, I'm so glad, because that really, really makes my day. That makes my world go around, that kind of stuff. Absolutely marvellous. But yes, of course, if you get a positive reaction, take another step. If you get a negative one, have a little think, but don't be too disheartened. So there we are. Ruth, it's been a pleasure having you on Answerable Questions with Credible Answers. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really, really enjoyed chatting to you guys.
And where can people find more about Magnify? I mean, obviously, presumably Googling, but somewhere
maybe
a bit more
specific. Yeah, so our website is magnifycollective.com, and all of our social handles are at Magnify Collective.
Marvellous. Get involved there, people. You won't be disappointed. If you want to socially engage with us, then find us on social media. The pubs are shut, so that's not an option at the time of recording. At AQQA Pod is where we are on Insta and Twitter. So there we are indeed. Thank you very much, Ruth.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Sarah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Cheers, pal.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you next week.